He was like a career thief. He came from, you know, a rough family. But he would break in cars and he would steal things, but he'd also steal cars. It started out here and there, and we were kind of, you know, looking at him as a suspect. Well, then it kept coming closer and closer together. The crimes kept getting worse, and that's when we really, in the Bureau, turned up the heat trying to catch him before he did anything else.
Cagle called me and said, hey, the guy you guys have been chasing, he's holed up in the thing, hostage units down there, you got to go. Hey, they've taken over my whole hotel. I was like, yeah, well, it's going to be this way for buddy. Don't. He's like, I got to do business. I said, your business probably gets suspended for a while.
Welcome back, listeners, to The Brighter Side of Blue, the worldwide podcast. I'm Danny.
I'm Tommy.
I'm JJ.
And producer John. We are on the other side. I'm right over here, John. He can't see us because we're just on the other side of the eclipse. And John ignored science and was staring at the eclipse.
I just realized with headphones on, I don't have any sense of direction. I can't look at the voice because I don't know where it's coming from.
So we have Huggy on the board, the soundboard today, because John's sight is still not back.
Right. It's getting better.
I don't know if the tape of the podcast from the St. Louis Hill studio will show that my sister Marion actually interrupted the taping and to deliver a pair of eclipse glasses to Tommy, because I told her, and I was kind of jesting that she wasn't picking up what I was putting down, that you weren't a believer in the science of staring at the eclipse. And my sister Marion is actually a scientist. And she was so appalled that you weren't going to go along with the science and you would be willing to stare at the sun during an eclipse that she walked to my house and dropped off. Did you notice that?
I did, but she doesn't like she lives 10 miles away.
No, she lives 8 houses up.
But you lied on me.
Right.
I just don't look at the sun in general. I might have taken a glance at it. I'm not going to stare at nothing.
You led me to believe that you weren't a believer in the whole you can't stare at the sun during an eclipse.
I don't think you can stare at the sun all day, any day.
I know, but do you understand the difference? When there's an eclipse either happening, it's softer on your eyes, so you think you can stare at it, but you can. It's still just as damaging.
I didn't think it was softer on my eyes. I just take a glance at it every once in a while.
Okay.
I got
a scientific question.
Yes.
Why didn't the Cardinals start Sonny Gray on Monday instead of Tuesday?
Anytime we get into science, JJ, he's over there just shaking it. You know what he was doing earlier, though, when we were playing
that
intro music?
John, I'm putting it together. You heard what he's saying on Eclipse Day. So we should have started Sonny Gray on the Eclipse Day.
He's got that quick sense of humor.
He does.
You got to digest
it. Yeah.
You got to digest it. I wasn't ready. I wasn't in a
That's
digestion
actually
mode.
That's pretty clever.
Oh, that is
so
pretty
he
clever.
He does speak during these things.
Yeah.
Well,
John said something kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Anytime we get scientific, he's
JJ's
out.
Well,
did you see him bobbing his head during the intro music?
I was. Hey, I'm down with the music.
See? Right. Usually you try to interrupt him.
I don't know where we're going after this. You got somewhere else to go? Or you got something else to say?
I do. What's
go ahead. No. I just got a beef with our Missouri legislation, and I'll do it after you're done.
Well, yeah, let me just, I'm so perplexed by that now that we
have to
do it now.
How do you move past that?
How do you go past that?
We got other shit to do, but let's
hear it. Let's go with it, because.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Well, as this airs, the Masters will be over, right? Mm-hmm. There's no.
They started today.
They did. And there's no secret that I'd like to do DraftKings. And I think you like to do DraftKings.
Yeah.
In Missouri, yeah, you can do DraftKings. So I didn't have time to go over to Illinois to place a bet. Because, you know, I'm a busy guy. So I woke up this morning, I tune into the Masters, and it's in a rain delay. So I think, oh, I got time, because I live right from Illinois. I can go over the bridge. So I call my brother. I said, hey, you home? He says, yeah. I go, I can come over. I can play some bets on FanDuel. FanDuel, you have to live in Illinois. Missouri, you can't. And so I was in a time crunch. Mm-hmm. So I'm mad at Missouri legislators for not passing the legal. I don't understand why you can do DraftKings in Missouri, but you can't do FanDuel. It's a sports book.
Right. You can do fantasy, but not bets.
Right. So I wanted to go across there and place just some long odd bets on some golfers to win it. I, you know, think have a chance and make some money.
Got you.
So I run over there, and I don't sign in until I get to my brother's house. I pull in front of the house. I'm trying to sign in. Well, now I'm running out of time, and FanDuel wants me to rechange my password, and then I'm changing the password. And then I get double authentication. I got to do double authentication, and I'm getting texts from them to authenticate it. And so I finally get to it, and I had my checking account compromised. And actually, detective, my son is in the Bureau, does fraud cases, took care of it. Someone took out money out of my account. So they're really strict on everything. So and then I figure I'm done. All of a sudden, my bank won't take. I keep trying to send money to it so I can place the bet. and it keeps dying. And finally, my phone gets a text from my bank about, are you, and it sends me all these things. I got to call my bank to tell them that I'm actually placing these bets. So finally, I got to it. So I finally placed these bets. But then it started taking all the bets I put in. So I put more.
You kept hitting more.
Yeah. So I placed quite a few bets. Not at least, not a whole lot, but still. But anyway.
But is it the same bet, too?
I just had a couple guys I did. So I said, instead of $5 on Zalatoris, I had $10. And I got $10 on. Yeah. So it ain't a big deal. But I tried to delete some of them, but it wouldn't let me because they teed off. So I got stuck with all these bets. So I'm pissed at the Missouri Lead. Why can't they pass? It's not going to hurt anybody. It just aggravates me. And I thought maybe you would give me support on this.
I 100% support you on this.
I also support your
gambling addiction and 1-800. I can stop gambling.
And that's the text I got next was about the gambling addiction. If a gambling addiction, call this number. I swear to God.
Oh, my God.
That's good advice.
I don't bet a lot. I just like DraftKings, and I do DraftKings. I love the Masters.
They make it legal in a lot of states, and if you got advice nowadays, remember back in the day, if you had advice, it was just, oh no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Now weed's legal.
But I don't understand. Right. We got. Yeah. Why not gambling?
Gambling.
You're just losing money.
People are going to do it. You're going to do it no matter what.
Right. I mean, when I used to go to throughout my years, different commands, different places I go to. Speaking about vices, that's where I'm going with this. But I'd go to the community meetings and they'd ladies stand up. Why can't you stop the prostitution? Why can't you? It's unbelievable, this and that. You know how bad I want to say, you know, King Louis in the 1700s couldn't stop prostitution.
It's the oldest profession.
And I'm good at my job, but as long as there's somebody who wants to pay for that vice, what can you do? But, you know, Missouri legislation, another thing they can't do. You know, the movie, the show Ozark wasn't filmed in the Ozarks because our state won't give the proper credits or it's not the tax breaks for these producers and movies to come in and do this because we're ancient.
Yeah,
in Missouri.
Yeah, a lot of government.
I don't give two damn.
But anyway, you sent us down.
I don't give a shit about the Ozarks deal, but.
It was a good show. Did you like it?
It was a very good show.
If you were in your car and you can honk, would you give him you would have gave him a pretty angry honk?
Oh, my blood pressure was off the charts, dude. I felt bad for my brother because he's trying to talk to me about stuff, and I'm looking at my phone trying. He goes, yeah. I go, no, this is. He even says,
I can see you.
I have myself so frustrated. He goes,
I can see.
He goes, I got a high blood pressure pill. If you want it, I said, no.
Were you like zipper merge mad?
Oh yeah. Oh, probably madder because I'm trying to get this. I just want to get a couple simple bets. Not on. I would say definitely equal because. It was just so frustrating, and I just wanted to just
take
a couple simple bets.
It's ridiculous.
If I had more time, I would have been fine, but the pressure of getting it before they first teed off was some again.
No,
it cost me money.
Yeah.
Let's go to the zipper merge real quick. So JJ the other day encounters another zipper merge. I think it's common for JJ on the way to work or something.
I go in real early, yes.
Yeah, so so he sends me like a 15-minute video or 15-second video of him – just blasting the zipper merge.
Aggravated.
Right. He's aggravated. And he's
but you got to admit, that was pretty good. My video was pretty good.
It was fun.
Good.
I've been watching my rear view.
Now, we'll be releasing it after this airs. But it, simultaneously as he sent me that, I believe it was Dodge. Chief Dodge. I'll call the Chiefs by their last name for some reason.
Yeah, you're privileged.
I know. Because he's high.
So JJ sends me his narration of the zipper merge, and then I get the Twitter from the trooper that explains the trip the
Highway Patrol
merge.
Missouri Highway Patrol trooper explains the zipper merge.
So when we release it on social media, it'll be the two combined, and it's pretty funny.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I think Big Brother's listening.
Oh, no, the troopers, they definitely heard that active lieutenant.
I disagree with the zipper merge, and they went on and put a professional video together.
They did.
It was
good.
Public service. We're down.
Yep.
We're getting big.
Get your dogs controlled. Chipped.
State Highway Patrol's listening to us. We're getting big.
Eliminate road rage and get your dogs chipped.
And now,
and
we appreciate the zipper merge.
Both of them.
Yeah.
Now we're down with the zipper merge.
Danny, that's all I got.
No, that's good.
Yeah, I'll see you guys.
I like the fact that our angriest guy is also our Zen guy.
funny I could do
that. Nice
that's how we take him down.
It's a nice contract.
That's how he needs it.
That's how I need to
If there's a guy that needs it, it's him.
Hey, producer John, we're on the highway stuff, I know. Why can people not fasten mattresses on their cars and vehicles? Why are there so many mattresses on the highway?
They're pliable.
Because mattresses aren't designed to be transported on the top of somebody's car with somebody sitting on either the driver's seat and the passenger seat with one hand on it and holding it doing 80 miles an hour.
So you need somebody in the back seat too. So you need four hands to hold it down.
Yeah, and aerodynamically, the wind gets underneath that mattress and becomes a sail. And next thing, it flies off.
Today I was going down Kings Highway. I had to go get my car looked at or oil change, whatever. And there's a police car stop. I'm like, wow, why is this stop? Now I'm trying to get to this. And he was stopped because the pickup truck in front of him, it was just a beat up pickup truck, but it had stacks of wash machines on it and pretty like too high on a pickup truck. One was missing because it was in the street, but it must have fallen perfect. It landed perfectly on right up and down.
But
one of them, but it flipped over and it was there and it was blocking one lane of traffic. And then they had the guy pulled over and they're trying to, I was like,
everything happens to you when you're driving.
It's crazy, isn't it? Well, it's in the city of St. Louis. You never know.
How often do you, just be honest with us. How often do you honk a day?
I don't ever. Just once in a while.
Okay.
I'm not big horn. I really am not a big horn guy. Horn guy. I'm really not. Okay. Just when really stupid stuff happens. Okay. I didn't beep at the guy that lost his wash machine. I thought it was kind of funny. That who stacks up too high? There's like six wash machines and dryers on a little beat up pickup.
Fred Sanford.
It's exactly what it looked like. Exactly.
He was just praying that something wouldn't fall off, but he probably very well knew that it was very
there's
likely.
A distinct possibility.
And yeah,
I don't think so.
I can't believe he stopped.
Actually,
he's probably taking it to junk to get it like the aluminum out of it or something.
Yeah,
not just the mattresses, but when you see those trucks going down one of the little wooden things.
The pallets,
dude. There's like those science. Stretch, right? There's like a science to them things.
I think the pallet people
never get behind one of those trucks.
Ought to secure people's mattresses
because they can secure the shit out of the pallets.
You never see those pallets. Well, you do kind of
50 high. Now you never get near them because you're scared that the shit's going to come down on you.
Yeah. So last week we did our show from the patio for the eclipse.
That was awesome.
It was really awesome. And then we were, JJ was able to get Eli Marrero on, who's a huge police supporter. And we were shocked. We were all taken off, the word I'm looking for, we were taken off our guard when Eli
surprised.
Said. We were surprised. That's what I'm trying to say. When Eli said at the end of April, his daughter, Abigail, becomes a City of Miami police officer. So Eli is Cardinal Nation family, and now he's Law Enforcement Nation family.
His blue daughter. Wave.
The blue wave.
What a good
The
dude.
Blue wave.
My good favorite dude. One was when he tracked his daughter's cell phone while she was out on her ride out when
ride
she
along.
Left the academy with the ride along. And him and his wife went out and tracked her cell phone and made sure she was okay. I just love that story.
I didn't even hear that.
Yeah.
You know, but if he wasn't
I was looking at the eclipse.
Yeah, you were right over there looking at the eclipse.
Yeah.
No, but that was just he's just energetic. You can just tell his love for the police and the military. It was just awesome.
That's a good job by JJ getting him on.
Well, yep. I thought it was cool that his daughter, who I see him, saw him kiss goodbye and his wife outside the stadium going ride-alongs, is now going to be a police officer in the
city of Miami. She'll be busy.
City of Miami. Abigail, good job.
It kind of shows that if you're pro law enforcement, you never know. Your kid might just
listen.
And then don't get mad at him. But
I would bet
stuff happens.
Eli, if he wasn't a baseball player, that he probably would have joined the police department.
Yep.
Yeah.
He already military. He said he's backed the military and the police department.
You just see, like producer John said, the blue wave is growing. It's growing.
Do any of you guys know John Costello? He used to pitch for the Cardinals and became a county cop.
Yep.
Is he still on?
I don't know that. I don't think so.
But that's a guy who pretty much went right from the major leagues to the police department, right?
Went out to St. Louis County.
Yeah. Well, there's a hockey player that was on Spit and Chicklets. He didn't make it to the NHL, but he became a Boston copper.
Okay.
Which I'd love to get him on. He was on Spit and Chicklets. He was very, very humorous. And what's his name? Brandon Walsh.
Okay.
Huggy.
Who I want to
Huggy
get
has all the answers at his fingertips.
I knew he knew that because I asked. Because I actually reached out to Boston PD and tried. And there was like three Brandon Walshes on the department. It seemed like that I was getting nowhere. And I got a voicemail. And I left a message and not heard.
You know,
I'd still like to try.
I had the opportunity, JJ, to spend a week in Boston as an assessor for their lieutenant to captain process.
Yeah, I did. Just kidding.
That's kind of hurt me.
It was a scam. So you could go to Boston for free.
You know who I want to get on the show? Grady Judd, that sheriff from Florida.
Oh yeah, gosh.
That dude, he just
strong.
And that's the greatest thing about those guys are elected, so they can't get fired by any city officials.
No bull crap.
Where most of the people in St. Louis, where most of our listeners are, those people are appointed, and they can be they start talking like Grady Judd.
Well,
they'll be fired in a lickety split.
You know, we have one St. Ann. Their chief. He says whatever
Aaron.
He
wants. Yep.
He's actually awesome.
Right.
What's his name? Her name?
Aaron
Jimenez.
Jimenez. Aaron Jimenez.
He'd be great to have. I've met him a few times.
Once again, Huggy chimes in with all the answers.
Yeah, he'd be a good guy to have
on. Taking Huggy to Jeopardy.
Yeah, Huggy, you'd be deadly in Jeopardy. I was playing Jeopardy one time in my captain's office. I was doing paperwork, something you're not familiar with, at the end of a shift. And I always used to watch Jeopardy. And this one day, I was half watching and half doing my paperwork. I was killing it. I was getting all the answers. I was going crazy. Like every time I got one, and my sergeant walked in, and my aide, and it was Schulte. He goes, "What's going on?" I go, "I am freaking dominating today in Jeopardy." He looks over and he goes, "It's Kid Jeopardy."
Nickelodeon.
Nickelodeon. Like, it was like the
fifth graders.
Yeah, fifth grade Jeopardy. I'm like, well, but I'm still dominating.
Pretty impressive.
I'm kicking their little asses.
That's what
I'm doing. Get on my phone.
I hear you.
Hey, producer Jack, how are we doing with the numbers, brother?
Man, last time I brought that up, I think I said we were approaching 1 million, and we've surpassed 2 million views across
2 million
all
views
now. Yeah.
Holy cow,
it's going crazy.
And have you found love?
No.
You know what? We need to stop talking about you. He's starting to get a complex.
Are you feeling all right?
When he finds a girlfriend, he'll let us know.
When I get a gal, I'll let you know. I'm going to Miami this weekend, actually. So
good for you.
Who knows?
Yeah.
They say hi to Eli.
We don't want him to meet anybody in Miami. We'd be screwed.
Yeah, you can't be. You have to come back.
No, this dude's doing his stuff from Miami.
We'll quit asking, and you give us the updates.
So
I am looking.
I got to say, Barney's wasn't the place for you.
Not my crowd. Not my crowd, but that's all right.
It's all right.
It's all right. We got some hopefully some announcements coming up on a new studio.
Yeah.
We're not ready to release that, but
we're working on something.
Yep.
Brick and mortar.
Well, but the other thing is that on some of our shorts, and these shorts are taking off. And when these shorts take off on TikTok or YouTube or Facebook, but mostly TikTok or YouTube, these shorts will take off and the haters come out. And, we're recording it well after this short will be out. But for all of the listeners, the short of me punching the guy in the fucking face with my wife.
I totally disagree with that, right. too. I didn't like that either, Tom.
Right. Did you?
I thought
it was a little excessive.
Yeah, it was a little excessive.
Whatever.
I got your badge.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. He didn't have one.
But anyway, YouTube wanted me locked up, fired. The whole bit. They were not understanding of the whole situation.
They weren't.
They just wanted me locked up.
Statute of limitations is way up on that one.
Right. And then the meth ones, which we talked about during the eclipse, and then your hater one, when you said to suck these, or defund these nuts.
Defund these nuts.
The haters on that one.
Suck these nuts. We got to get the t-shirts changed.
Yeah, change it. Who messed these shirts up?
Defund and. No, but... Yeah, the haters were out, and it's some funny stuff. We don't respond to the haters. We do respond to the people that respond positively, but we'd leave the haters alone and let them do their own thing.
And the haters are the minority. The blue wave is growing, and it's traveling across the country.
Oh, the likes dominate the haters.
Off the charts. But you got me wound up with this punch-in-the-face stuff, so it's time to go. You know where it's time to go.
Yeah.
We got to chill. Oh, hell no.
Come on.
Come on with that JJ Zen.
All right. This is coming from Ed Mesplay, the American Republic Insurance Company, health insurance, Medicare. He's a specialist for 25 years. I'll give you his number right now, 636-840-8530. Thanks, Ed, for this one. This one actually sums up my career as a police officer, my philosophy, how I treated people on the street. And then and I have to explain it afterwards, but here we go. My moral in life is simple. You treat me good, and I will definitely treat you better. My moral in life is simple. You treat me good, and I will definitely treat you better. Yeah. So kids, guys on the street had bad attitudes. I'd always say, hey, listen, you got me mixed up with somebody else. Let's start this over. I'll treat you good if you treat me good. Change your attitude. So that's kind of how I kind of
I like that. My life. Huh? I like that.
That was a little personal sidekick.
You treat me good, I'll treat you better.
Right. Right. That's my philosophy.
You treat me bad, I'll treat you better.
And how many times have you been on a scene or on a call and the guy, he's just a total jerk, or a female, they're just out of control.
Oh, yeah.
And
loud.
Oh, and then you finally put them in their place. The best thing I've ever seen, though, was Scott Boyer, was my sergeant.
Oh, Scott.
And we got
Boyer.
Called, and he was the best at deflecting, I'm telling you. So we were up there, and this gal, black female, and she's mad. Not at us, mad at her kids, mad at somebody, but she's screaming.
Just mad.
We can't get her to be quiet. We tell her to calm down. She's telling no, and she just keeps going screaming. I don't care what you have to say. That she's just screaming. And finally, real quietly, Scott Boyer says, do you need a hug? And she keeps going, and she stops, and she looks at him and says, yeah, I do need a hug. And he hugged her. It was a fun, and she started laughing. Was totally disarmed, and it was the greatest line. And I have used
that's
that.
That's cool.
I love that.
And I've used it since then. Scott, appreciate that. It was a great
shout out to Scotty Boyer.
Yeah, it was so funny.
That's a good
she
story.
She was going crazy. And he goes, ma'am, do you need a hug? And she just, that was not the thing she thought it was going to come out of his
mouth. Exactly.
But then now it's all good.
Oh, yeah.
That was always my favorite deflect. When you could go into a situation that was tense and flip somebody from being completely irate. Right.
Yes.
And get them under control to where now they're cooperative and they're in a good place. It was like hitting a home run because
right.
The main thing most of the time it's, you know, you have a problem because people are emotional.
Yes.
And if you can get them back under control, and that's what I told my son when he joined the police department, is your main job is just to be able to chill people out.
Yes.
And sometimes it's your partner you have to chill out, or sometimes it's somebody else, but you know, nothing good happens when the emotions are that high.
No.
So. Yeah, we're peace officers. You get there and you chill out the scene and, you know.
Right.
You know,
and it just makes everything worse when you make it worse. If there's coppers that make it worse sometimes.
When you double down.
Oh.
You double down.
Just come on, man.
Yeah, I can get more mad than you.
No. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I got you.
No, that's just life in general, right? You get an argument with a family member. Well, somebody got to chill out.
Right. I just leave.
That's a good option too.
Like he always leaves the podcast.
You know, we do have to announce that the third district festivities that we were going to hold a podcast at the third district, the old third district station. Well, the guy that runs that place or owns the place,
he's not interested.
He's not answering our calls anymore.
Yeah, it's fine.
He told us, but just. In our defense, and Tommy Malachek was trying to set it up with myself. He told us, "Hey, I'll just call." First time we talked to him, you think we called him any day, and we'd been in there. Well, as the time started coming close, and we were calling him, he's nowhere to be found. We're ringing a doorbell there, the whole bit. He's nowhere to be found, so we cannot. Even if he comes back, we can't trust him. So, we're going to just delay any event. We're going to do an event. Well, anytime we want to do an event, we want to do it right. So we're just going to delay it. We're not going to announce any events just yet, and we will do something in May.
I'm surprised Malachek couldn't call a pope, a prince, or a president and get that done.
He can get shit done around in St. Louis now.
Yeah, well, like you said, we're not going to go there and be standing at the door locked out and have thousands, if not millions, of our listeners show up and just be standing there with our Peters in our hands.
Well, one of the guests that we were going to have on was Rich Banahan, and I called him to let him know, but we started talking about stories, and he told a quick story that I thought was just, it had me crying. But as you know, as a detective, if you lock somebody up and you need a lineup done, you got to go downtown, you got to round three people up, put them in with the suspect, and then see if they pick them out. So,
and they have to be similar, you know.
Right, somewhat similar.
Yeah.
But back in the day, they had officers down there. They had a sergeant down there, and they had a police officer down there. And whenever you needed to do that, you would see them, and they would help you set this thing up. And so this particular detective, and it wasn't Banahan, he was just telling the story. It was this particular detective went down there, and he's talking to the holdover officer. He says, I need to hold a lineup. And the holdover officer says, hey, did you hear about the Supreme Court hearing? and the guy's like, no, what's up with that? He says, well, you have to have an equal number of blacks and whites in every lineup. So the guy's like, all right. He trusts him. He runs the holdover. You know, who's all right. So they go get two black guys, two white guys. They put them in a lineup. Of course, the victim picks them right out. So the guy goes over to apply for the warrant.
At the prosecutor's office.
At the prosecutor's office. So he's applying. The attorney gets in. He looks at the phone. looks at the lineup. And he goes, what is this? And the guy goes, well, it's the new Supreme Court hearing. And he goes, what? What are you talking about? He goes, he goes, who the fuck told you that? So the guy over in the holdover. And then they had to go back and do another lineup. So
really?
Get it right.
Well, really? I can't great. Imagine
who
that.
Who the fuck told you that?
Oh, my goodness. Producer John, you got any newsroom.com stuff for us?
We have a special one today because it came from
They're all special, a listener.
And
oh, this came from a listener.
A friend of ours, a friend of the podcast, retired Lieutenant John Walsh.
Oh, yeah.
John was at our Barney's event the other night, but John's a great guy. I don't know if you guys ever worked with him.
Yes, I did.
I have. Yep.
Yeah.
And I played in golf tournament with him.
And his dad, Major Walsh, was a prince of a man.
Yep.
But John sent us this. It doesn't have a year on it, but I'm assuming it was a little while ago, but it could have been yesterday. But anyway, this is from Woodruff County, Arkansas. Two local men injured in freak truck accident. Okay, you know, not too crazy there, but it gets better. Two local men were seriously injured when their pickup truck left the road and struck a tree on State Highway 38 early Monday morning. Woodruff Deputy Dovey Snyder reported the accident shortly after midnight on Monday. Thurston Poole and Billy Ray Wallace, there had to be a Billy Ray involved, are listed in serious condition at the hospital. The accident occurred as the two men were returning after a frog gigging trip. On an overcast Sunday night, Poole's pickup truck's headlights malfunctioned. The two men concluded that the headlight fuse had burned out. So as a replacement fuse was not available, Wallace noticed that the .22 caliber bullet from his pistol fit perfectly into the fuse box next to the steering wheel on the steering column. All right, so this is some pretty good engineering here.
Like where he's going.
Thinking on the fly, you're in the middle of nowhere.
Is this Billy Ray that did this or the other one?
Thurston Howell.
Thurston Howell the third.
So Thurston's
a smart one.
All right, come on, Thurston.
So anyway, he pulls the bullet out, sticks it in the slot, and the headlights pop back on. So they proceeded on eastbound toward White River Bridge, which has been since torn down. I looked it up. But anyway, after traveling approximately 20 miles and just before crossing the river, the bullet apparently overheated, discharging the bullet and hit Poole in the right testicle.
You should have put the bullet the other way.
Yeah, away from you. Right. Never pointed.
The left testicle.
Good, Jimmy, because it probably would have worked either way. Right. So anyway, with these guys, it's the first time they ever tried this, apparently. So the vehicle swerved sharply. To the right.
Last time, too.
They exited the pavement, and they struck a tree. Now, Poole suffered only minor cuts and abrasions from the accident, but will require surgery to repair the other wound.
Did he lose it? He down to one?
So the other wound was pretty bad, apparently. So Wallace, his unfortunate buddy, sustained a broken clavicle and was treated and released.
Shit.
So Wallace stated, thank God we weren't on the bridge when Thurston's shot.
Thurston.
He can't put it. Thank God we weren't on the bridge.
You
Hey, Huggy, read it for him.
Thank God we weren't on the bridge when Thurston shot his nuts off. We might both be dead.
That's gonna be possible to beat that one. that crushed the duck.
That is better than a kick duck. Duck.
Deputy Snyder said he's been a trooper for 10 years. I've never seen anything like it.
I've been a human for 60. I've never heard no shit like that.
So to add insult to injury, upon being notified of the wreck, Lavinia, Poole's wife, asked how many frogs the boy caught and if any of them had gotten away.
She didn't care about his nut, huh?
John Walsh, thank you very much for that.
Yeah, that is, oh my God.
Holy shit.
Any other listeners got something like that sent it our way?
That is a strong one.
That's right,
strong.
There, brother. No way you can pass that one.
I don't know if we can keep going after that. I mean,
but
I have
what's
to
next?
Say.
What's next? Our we got the officers or the Blue Line Roundtable.
Yeah, Blue Round. Oh yeah, and I really love this one tonight. Retired 20-year police veteran and a wise guy, good detective. John Heffley's coming on.
Yeah, neat stories. Yeah, we had a lot. John was my partner back in the day, and we worked for John Frank and. We had a lot of fun, and the stories were good. And there's a neat couple stories that'll make you laugh, and then some serious stories too. So,
yep, that was awesome. And we have to end it on that. JJ, you have anything?
No.
Producer John,
I'm done.
Brighter Side of Blue.
Peace.
Oh. All right, welcome back. We're at the Blue Line Roundtable. We have a special guest that joined us: 20-year veteran, retired, and. What was it? What did you say? 2008?
Eight.
Detective Johnny Heffley, welcome to the show, John.
Appreciate the invite.
Yeah. Old partners with Tommy Sawyer. Did Tommy Sawyer ever write a report?
No. But he was very adept at keeping candy all the time down in the map pockets of the cars. And it didn't matter what car, it was always there.
What kind of candy? What was it?
He liked Jawbreakers.
Sprees.
Sprees. Terrible candy.
I could rifle.
I did.
Surveillances. I would rifle through some candy.
What are the tart things?
Sweet tarts.
Yeah, love those.
I like sweet taffy. That was big taffy.
I'm a good.
You're not
I
a chocolate
like
man.
Don't like chocolate.
Really?
But I would pound down the Jolly Ranchers.
Oh yeah.
I'm just Tolops of that.
Yeah.
All right.
It's amazing. He'd go down there and
just keep pulling them out. Endless supply of sweet tarts.
8 o'clock in the
morning. How long did you ride with Tom Sawyer?
I don't know. A couple years. A
couple years, and then he went on to the Czech squad. He had enough of me.
The Tom.
He came up with the. Did you hear what fucking Sawyer did? Fan club.
That was the name of the fan club?
It was the name of the fan club, yeah.
Did you hear what fucking Sawyer did?
Yeah.
Did you hear what Sawyer did? It had great legs, too.
I can't believe there's a fan club.
Commanders loved it. Everybody.
There's only two people in it.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, no. There's a lot of people that would hear what Sawyer did.
Hear what Sawyer did?
Yeah. Because then, you know, I would do something, and then whoever I was working with or for would go, hey, did you hear what Sawyer did?
Oh.
So Heffley started a club.
Tell us your best story riding together as partners.
Oh. So I'll set it up, and then Hef can take it home. But
he assumes you know the best story.
No, but when I started, he'll know. So this is the most mad he's ever been at me. I mean, he got mad.
You know
but
already.
Anyway, not, yeah.
It's so, narrowing down.
Yes, he knows exactly what it is now. So Hef had been, we had been looking for a guy that stole some computers. And we got him on the south side on Morgan Ford.
Did it hit you just now?
Oh, yeah.
We bring him back to the station, and we're working 4 to midnight. And I got shit to do.
After midnight.
Yeah, we were going to go boozing or whatever we were going to do.
Important.
We get this guy at about 8 o'clock, 7:30, 8 o'clock. So I'm thinking there's no way that I'm going to miss this.
Right.
So, but Hef's got to, we got to interview the guy and, you know.
We were trying to get information from the guy, too.
Yeah, it wasn't
quite all wrapped up.
Right, yeah.
Go ahead.
There's still work to be done.
There's a lot of work to be done, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, we got these three guys. We go to on Morgan Ford. We get a bunch of computers and things back. We haul all the stuff back to the station. Tom had this wonderfully terrible habit. When all the stuff started coming around, Tom would sometimes disappear. He'd just be gone.
Go get sweet tarts.
Yeah, whatever. Or the bar. So we got a guy, and we're trying to figure out what happened here. And so we get this guy, and he ends up, he says, I have AIDS. So I said, okay. So put him in the interview room. We're talking to him. This isn't going fast enough for Tom, but this guy wants to tell his story. He's going to get to the point where he tells us what we want to know, but I have to listen to three hours.
Of story.
Yeah. So we're going on. I'm going, oh, it's terrible. It's terrible. Feel bad for you. Right about the time the guy said, well, you know, I really appreciate you listening to me because not everybody would do this. I said, yeah, no problem. Tommy, I have a, you know, the sign you make, interview in progress.
Yes. Well, I knew the interview was in progress.
Oh, he knew it was in progress. Sign comes off the door comes flying open, and he starts launching into the guy, not knowing anything about where we've been, right?
Yeah,
the roadmap had been,
I called
he
him
has
a
no
few
idea.
Names.
Oh, he called him all kinds of
well,
names.
Well, I wanted you to do the good cop, bad cop thing.
Okay.
I
but the time from that was like at the beginning.
Or to talk with your partner about that.
We see this temper when doing the show. He gets frustrated, and everybody says, I get frustrated. He wanted to get this going because he wanted to leave because he did want to go boozing.
Yeah, so the guy looks at me and he said, hey, I like you. I hate that asshole. And I got nothing more to say to anybody in this place. So I got up, and we're tired now. And I
was going, he was mad.
I was like, hey, you see what that sign? You know the sign up there? Said, yeah, I saw that sign. I said, well, either you can't read, maybe you don't read well. I don't know what the deal is, but this is over. He says, you can just go do whatever you need to do. Oh, I was hot. I was hot.
For a day or two. Yeah, I think I got the cold shoulder the next day, too.
Hot.
But, when I told Connie, my wife, that you were coming on, she said to tell you thank you for teaching Jack, our son, how to cuss like a sailor.
Well, look how he turned out.
He did.
I mean, a cussing sailor.
So this is a great kid.
So, but when John, tell him what you used to do to Jack when we come around at like 3 years old.
We go to Tommy's house and little Jack was running around and I tell him, hey, Jack, come over here. He'd always look at me suspiciously, you know, and he walk over there hesitantly and I go, hey, Jack. I'm going to beat your ass. I'd say a dirty word. He started to giggle, and I said, if you tell him, I'm going to beat your ass. And he used to laugh harder. And he'd want to go tell Tom or his mom.
That you're cursing at him?
I said, oh, don't you do that. I will beat your ass.
This would go
then
on
I wrote
the
him
time.
A poem. I was out of town.
For his graduation.
Do you remember the poem?
I don't remember the poem.
I wish I would have remembered.
Yeah, you should have.
He wrote
that.
A poem to Jack for graduation.
Yeah, for his graduation.
Well, do you remember any lines?
I laughed.
Yes, it ended with, I know you're a kid with a lot of class, and always remember, I'm going to beat your ass.
So, yeah, it had about 6 or 7 stances, and I was proud. I was laughing when I was writing it.
Oh, you taught him well, because I always liked the story when he was 3 years old, and we got a Burger King, and he had a little thing of fries, and one of them stray onion rings made it in there.
Oh, yeah.
And he ate the onion ring, and he pulls it out, and he looks at it, he goes, what is this shit?
So, 3 years old.
Yep.
Dude, the kid had attitude for a long time. He was probably maybe nine or ten. I called the house. Like, I don't know why. We used the house phones.
Right.
I called. I said, he answers like, what do you want? Or who is this? Or something not professional at all.
Little Jack Sawyer.
I said, hey, you last. I said, get Tom, get your dad on the phone. He goes, click, and he hangs up. I go, are you shitting me? So I call him back. I go, don't you even think about hanging up on me again. Get your dad. Click.
Are you shitting me?
Finally, I was so mad. I was hot. And finally, he answered the next one laughing his ass. I don't know if he was listening or he saw it. I ready to kill. I was going to drive over his house and spank him. He hung up on me twice.
He came by it naturally.
Okay.
You know what, though? With all that said, he did turn out to be an unbelievable kid, though.
He's a great kid. He is really
good. I'm surprised.
It was just
I thought he was going to be hell on wheels, dude.
I'm going to try to throw a little curveball at you, Johnny.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a lot of policemen on the show because it's kind of like a law enforcement show.
What?
So we end up having a lot of policemen on there yet. But so 20 years on the job, can you think off the top of your head that's something that you did or happened to you, some privilege that you got, some place that you were, solely because you were a policeman?
Someone famous, maybe?
Like met somebody famous or behind the backstage with somebody famous because you were a law enforcement or something like that.
I didn't actually end up backstage, but I did get in trouble for this particular thing. It was VP Fair, so I get the detail.
The Veiled Prophet,
and
4th of July.
I'm on the side of the stage, and Ringo Starr's kid was a drummer in one of these bands. I think Ringo Starr was still alive and his son was playing drums. I don't, who was the guy that used to be the reporter at the Globe Democrat? He died now. He was like the entertainment guy. Wait, Jerry Berger?
He's Jerry Berger? Alive.
Yeah.
Berger.
So no, Jerry Berger's not alive.
No, he died.
Wait a minute. Ringo's dead?
I don't know. But anyway, Jerry Berger comes up to me. He says, hey, officer, you got a second? You know, it's hot. And yeah, sure. What's up? He goes, what do you think about all this? And I made some comment about Ringo Starr. I said, well, you know, we're kind of lucky. Something about him having a myocardial infarction, you know? Sure enough, this guy goes and writes. I don't know what I said. It was something more than that. It ends up in the paper. So I come in for the detail the next day. Captain Perkins goes, hey, can you come in here for a minute? I said, yeah, sure. What's going on? He goes, look at that. So I'm reading. I said, oh. He said, oh, don't make comments to people. In
You gave him a disease?
Yeah, I said, hey, sorry.
Ringo Starr's got a disease. He's about to die now.
I'm just making a comment. You know me, Captain. I'll talk to a corpse. You know what I mean? Just making a comment.
Sounds like something I would have done. Yeah. Just make something up.
You're talking to three of them now.
So Ringo Starr, corpses. That's your guy? The Beatles. That's pretty big.
It could have been big. It really, I'd like to embellish the story to make it better than it is. I would, because then I would have gone and partied with those guys afterwards.
Yeah.
You could have. It's not too late. If you want me to go to the bathroom, I'll come back. I'll have a whole story for you.
So you can do that.
You guys remember, here's another Veiled Prophet fair story is, do you remember the golf incident down there on the landing?
When the guy was hitting him off the top of the building?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were down there. It was the fireworks were over. Everybody was going home. And Shelley Stevens and I were standing by Eads Bridge. Well, all of a sudden, we're just standing there on Wharf Street, and we see a golf ball bounce by. Well, then we see another one. And these golf balls are hitting the bridge and bouncing back. So we look down the street toward the north, and there's a three-level parking garage. Well, we can see the golf balls coming off the top of the garage, and they're, you know, it's dangerous, and they're hitting. There's thousands of people waiting to get on the Metrolink and stuff. So I go, come on, Shelly, let's go up there. So we sneak up the steps, we get up to the top level, and here's these guys. And
Jack Sawyer's up there winging on, swinging.
Yeah.
I think it was Jack, but they had a little piece of AstroTurf, and they had their golf clubs laid out, and they were hit. And they were drunk, you know, and they were just, you know, laughing and hooting and hollering. So we go up there, and they, of course, they dropped the clubs, and I go up there, what are you messing with as far? I said, because you're hitting golf balls into the crowd, you're going to kill somebody. He goes, well, we didn't hit no golf ball. So all of a sudden, then I hear Shelly say, get your hands off me. Well, this guy, Shelly's yelling at this guy. The guy was, like, behind her. So I went up, and I thought she got assaulted, so I hit him. And I knock him down.
I've heard this story before.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, we get on the air, you know, we call for backup. And, you know, and I looked down, you know, there was like a ramp coming up. And I saw like a beautiful sight, like the Dudley brothers and Tony Johnson and all these huge policemen are running up there. And we get the guy who I punched. And then we also got the guy we saw hitting the balls. Anyway, they all get locked up. And I said, Shelly, what happened? You know, what did the guy do? And she goes, I don't want to tell you. And I said, come on, you got to tell me. She goes, I'm not going to tell you, Sergeant. I said, damn it, tell me what happened. You know, what did the guy say to you? She goes, she said, I'm sorry. Do you want some barbecue? So anyway, he got locked up, but he did assault her. He put hands on one of my detectives.
Hey, I got one. How many balls did you hit before you left?
Yeah.
I hit him the other direction, away from the people. I hit him
to the river.
I was laughing hard because I could see myself doing that.
Hitting golf balls?
Yeah. When I was
not
young.
Into a crowd.
When I was hurt. When I was like 18, I could see myself doing that.
Now we know where he's got it.
We used to hit golf balls from the Erie 2 station. Remember when they're building the school across the street?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So we always had clubs in the car. Right. So you have a few poppers after work, tee them up, you know, right in there, bing. So one night we're firing them away and they're, tsh.
All right, let's go.
10 cars.
Wrap it up.
It's out of that lot.
Wrap it up.
Out of there, man.
Oh, my God.
So, John, the other story that over the years that is a classic is the Chuck Young. Said Chuck was a 9th District police officer. He was older than us. He was an old-time veteran, a surly guy, but just a great guy. And he on Christmas, he went missing. So tell that story, John.
Yeah, so I was a brand new police. I was pretty new, and I was on the afternoon watch. I wasn't on afternoons. I got put on it. Shortage of people. So we're driving around, and it's Christmas Eve. So the Joe Hoeing, remember Joe Hoeing?
Joe Hoeing.
So Joe's back. He's on the back porch in the old Ninth District, just smoking his pipe. It looked like Bing Crosby, you know, puffing away. And he wants relief called. So he does, and Joe doesn't. He said, "Where's Chuck?" Everybody comes to the back of the station. It's Christmas Eve, he's trying to get out of there.
Plus, Chuck missed like five radio calls.
Oh, he's,
I was working that night,
too. He was AWOL the whole night. Gone the whole night. Nobody knows
where. We were all looking for him. We were going by all the taverns.
So Hoeing says, "Hey, you can't, where is he?" Nobody knows. So he said, "We can't go home till we find this guy." "Get back in your car. Go wherever you think he might be and go find him." So I'd be driving around. This goes on 20 minutes. They're trying to put the night watch, but we got the cars. So finally, he gets on the radio, and he goes, 922.
That's how he talked to me.
922. Spanish goes, 922. "I'm here." That's how it starts.
"I'm here."
So then they said.
Official police jargon.
"I'm here." So I know they're looking for me. So they called relief. Dispatcher says, "Well, 9/11 area, make a relief. 9/11 area, make a relief. And have a Merry Christmas." There's a pregnant pause. Next thing you hear is 2922. 2922. "Merry Christmas and fuck you too."
He was mad.
Who knows?
On the air.
Yeah, right on the air. And Joe Hoeing about swallowed the pipe. He's like, "What? What'd he say?" Well, you know, he and Chris, remember Greg Fossage?
Hmm?
Well, Chuck had Chuck had a terrible habit. He would never take his finger off the mic. He'd be in a car, so everything he said, you know, they hit the. Now they think they could just cut you straight off. Remember how they'd hit the squelch? But try to give you a signal like
open mic, all cars check for an open mic. Yeah,
Chuck would get on there, and there was a wheel store at Compton and like Cardinal and like Sam Shepard. This guy opens a fancy wheel store. Some guy walks in there one day and he decides he wants this particular wheel. It's inside of a tire. He steals it. He runs down. He's going down Olive with it. He's wheeling it down towards Grant. So they get the call. So here they come around the corner. Neither one of these guys would run 3 feet, ever. That's just one of their gig. So you hear Chuck going, "Gaga, get in the goddamn car. Gaga, get in the fucking car."
It's on the air.
Oh, yeah.
So Gaga is Fossage's nickname.
He'd go, "Gaga, gaga," that's how he laughed. Right. You know? They call him Gaga. So he's going, "God damn it, Greg, you're going to have a goddamn heart attack. Get in the fucking car." So they keep hitting the thing like, burn.
Open mic.
Oh, yeah. You know, you could imagine in the station going, "Oh, my God, stop this maniac. Somebody drive up there and tell him to get off the radio." He's going, "Get in the fucking car, Gaga. God damn it, you're going to have a heart attack right out here." Must have used F-U-C-K about 50 times between, like, you know, Compton and Grand.
Get in the car, God damn it.
Get in the car.
Did they catch him?
Oh, they got. Well, he couldn't go far. He was too stupid to let go of the wheel. Even you can go a little faster. I don't know, man. You can go a little faster in a car, but when you get those two guys out on foot, all bets are off.
That's right? Classic.
Johnny, you want to set up the Robert Rebstock case?
Yeah, it was probably the most elaborate case we had during my tenure in the Central Bureau. But Robert Rebstock was a young kid that, what was he, 20-something, early 20s?
20, yeah, probably 21. 27.
Yeah.
No, he was in early 20s.
Early 20s. He was like a career thief. He came from, a rough family. But he would break in cars, and he would steal things, but he'd also steal cars. And just like that case we were talking about with the stick-up man on the West End, it started out here and there, and we were kind of, looking at him as a suspect. Well, then it kept coming closer and closer together. The crimes kept getting worse, and every night it seemed like there was some kind of incident with Robert, and that's when we really in the Bureau turned up the heat trying to catch him before he did anything else.
Right, and I think one of the first dealings you had with him, John, was when he also did a stolen credit card thing, and at the time...
Yeah, I didn't know anything about him.
Right, and at the time you were riding with Tom Dotson.
Tommy Dotson,
and you were doing check cases.
I had no idea who Rebstock was. I think Mickey... I think that was Mickey Regan's case.
It was his case.
I didn't have any idea who he was. So how we got involved in it was like the second series of stolen credit cards that this kid had used. So we're just following up on our thing. We have no idea who Robbie Rebstock is. So we get the credit card. We go back to, it's like on Watson Road, like a Rent-A-Center type place. So he was using the credit cards, and he was ordering big screen TVs. So we're looking at the police report where these things are delivered to. It's a vacant lot, like a Cole and 15th Street. So I drive over to the place, and I said, hey, who's the driver? Can I get the receipt? And so the manager's like, sure, here it is. I said, who's this driver? It was like, Daryl. Daryl in today? So Daryl calls me, and Daryl says, yeah, what do you need from me? I said, well, you're not in trouble. I said, but did you remember delivering a couple of these TVs downtown, like in the middle of nowhere, like a field? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, does that seem odd to you? He said, I only paid for it. I said, well, do you remember anything about it? And it was a white dude. He said, it was a white dude. And he had a van. I unloaded him. He loaded him. And that was it. I drove away. So, okay. So that's how we got on. That's how we got on Robbie Rebstock.
Right. So you're looking for him for that.
For that. And I don't even know any of this stuff is going on. But you know how
everybody
starts having conversations. Right. Yeah, figure out, you know, one and one's two. And now you're looking for the same guy. And
right.
So it just, the whole thing spiraled quickly.
And then when everybody started getting these cases and everybody's talking about it, now it's the talk of the Bureau, well, then the cases would get more violent, more,
yeah, that's right.
You know, there would be carjackings, there was cars on fire. He anytime he would steal a car and dump it, he would light it on fire.
Wow.
So now we're starting to catch fires at night. So now it's the whole Bureau's is on this thing. Both shifts... you dumped all your other cases, and this guy needed to be captured. And we would go to just house after house. How many houses did we hit, John?
Yeah, probably, you know, 10, 15. He stole a car down on the arch grounds, and, they tried to grab him, and he rammed through the gate. And I had my radio at home, and they were chasing him, and then the 4th District was chasing him, and he ended up getting on Highway 70, going the wrong way on Highway 70, wrong direction. And it was just every day you come in and say, well, where did you find Robert's burnt up car?
Right.
So we knew what area he was in, but then he'd steal another one from wherever he burnt, the car. So
then he got into carjacking. So
was he on drugs? Was he?
Oh, yeah.
Well, what was his drug of choice?
Probably meth.
Probably meth.
Meth around then?
Yeah.
A meth or crack.
No, we're blaming everything on meth these days.
No, I think it's his
good shorts.
I think he's a full-fledged crackhead. Yeah. I think he's a crackhead.
Well, it was interesting because I remember the first LID photo anybody got, because he'd been booked before for
stuff. It's a booking photo, a mugshot. Yeah. We have listeners in Singapore that don't really know what a...
Tell
that's it. Right. We kind of take... Sometimes we act like people know what we're talking about in St. Louis. We got a different way of doing things.
I remember the first picture came of this kid. He's kind of robust looking kid.
Good looking kid, if I remember correctly.
Big, thick neck, look well put together. And I remember at the very end when we finally did get him under bad circumstances, he was emaciated. Like you just tell, he was ravaged.
Yeah, right. So the drugs really ate him up. It was meth. Yeah.
Did he ever?
I don't know.
No, we're just sticking with it.
Well, this was 98, just for reference for the...
I don't think.
Well, methamphetamine in some form has been around for a long time.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I mean, right. I used to use it, so...
Basically, we don't remember what drugs.
We didn't call it that.
He was on drugs.
Yeah.
Now, did he ever do any violent crimes at all? Was it all just...
Well, carjacking.
Oh, he did.
He did a couple carjackings.
Oh, okay.
He was telling everybody, I'm shooting it out.
Yeah.
I'm shooting it out with the police. He would tell relatives. So it was kind of like the Tory Miller hint, but... He hadn't killed anybody, so it wasn't the whole city wasn't looking for him, but our Bureau, the entire Bureau was looking for him. There was no other cases being done, and John was telling everybody. I mean, John and who was the other sergeant? I think it was...
Silas.
And then we had orders that do nothing but go look for this guy.
I remember
and we were always...
They canceled. Tommy and I got put on nights. I mean,
yeah.
They just told us, no more checks, no more nothing. Just till this guy's...
Get this guy.
Yeah.
One man crime spree.
Just I was going to say.
He was
I said it faster.
You did.
But yeah, so we're chasing this guy, and we're always, 10 hours behind him? We're always like 8 to 10 hours behind him. He just left. He just did this. He just did that. And then his mom, I mean, the relatives were actually, weren't they cooperative?
They were cooperative.
Yes.
I think they wanted him to get caught before
he
got killed. Yeah.
This was going bad. She was hoping we'd get him.
Yep.
Before anything else happened.
And then the night, so it was a, It was a Sunday night, and we were all looking for him throughout the Sunday night. And in the bureau, we would switch shifts from Sunday to Monday. So if you work 4 to midnight on Sunday on shift change, you would come back at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
And I remember this because we were looking for him from 4 to midnight, and then obviously we were going to continue. And we were looking for – didn't we work overtime that night, John, too, on Sunday, looking for him because we thought we were close?
Yeah, we were on his tail. And
because you allowed us to take the car home. It was me, yeah. Anderson, and Gurman. You allowed us to take the car home because I can remember we got the call in the morning.
Well, you remember that the setup to that was that we could never get the kid. We'd go into a place. This happened about 4 or 5 times. Remember, we went into a place, and you could smell him. He was just there, just out. So we came up with this plan. The only thing is mom. I remember going to speak to the mother up on Chambers Road, up in Bell Fountain Neighbors. And the mother said, well, he's got this dog, and I watch his dog once in a while. So we got this bright idea. I said, well, okay, we'll take the dog. We'll flush him out. So Donaldson and Craig Hebrink went and got the dog and put it down to the pound.
Is that? And I believe it was you and Tommy Dodson got the information from somebody.
Mom.
That this kid would meet a priest. We'll leave the priest's name out of it, but he would meet a priest.
Retired priest.
A retired priest at the MAC to get money and to get little
you
things.
You figure where that's
going. Oh, this money.
Right. So, and it turns out that the father had a similar relationship with the priest prior to the son, so kind of passed the son to the priest.
It was a wild story. This is weird.
Yeah.
So I remember talking to the mom, and the mom said, with just what you said, she said, well, he goes down and he sees this priest. And she told me that, and I was like, kid's 25 years old. He's still going down to see a priest at the MAC at night. So remember, so we set up down at the MAC. We were trying anything, so maybe we'd get the kid. So Dotson and I went out. Remember Regina Clary? It's a retirement home for the priest on, what is that?
Watson.
Watson.
McLeod Station.
McLeod Station Road.
That's right.
So Dotson and I go in there in the day one, and there's a lady, older woman, sitting behind the desk. And so we tell her who we are, show her badges, and they said, hey, is Father so-and-so here? And she got the worst look on her face. She didn't say anything at first. And I said, that doesn't seem like it sat well with you. And she said, are you guys from Shrewsbury again? And I said, no, we're St. Louis City Police. And she said, oh. St. Louis, Shrewsbury was just here not too long ago. I think they did. She didn't know what to call it. Search warrant or, consent to search. She said, they took stuff. She's talking all around and she goes, they took stuff out of his room. So, me, I'm like, what stuff?
Yeah,
and
computer.
She said, that was one thing. She said they took some tapes and some magazines. I said, I get it.
Enough said, yeah.
I get it. So that's when you're like, okay, now we know what's happened here. The history of this, you just put it together.
Right.
This kid keeps going down there.
Because I remember I was up there with you a couple nights at the MAC waiting for this, but it never came to. But the other thing, but you were getting to it, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you were getting to the point about the dog, so continue with the dog.
No, so they took the dog down the pound down there on Gasconade, thinking this is it. Well, this kid will either call, because mom's like, the one thing he loves is the dog. So we figured, maybe he'll flush himself out, and he'll just want to give up.
For his dog.
Well, he did all right. He stole a car and drove it right through the gate, broke into the pound, took his dog, and drove away with it.
Are you kidding?
No, me? He went right. He smashed right through the gate. Smashed right through the front door.
Yes. And got his dog.
So he went and found his dog in there and in took the it, put night. It in the car, and
that
drove
sort of
away.
Backfired on you, didn't it?
Yeah, a little bit.
So he's off the reservation. This guy is gone.
Yeah, that's when we knew it was close.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't know. Yeah, we knew it was close because I think you get the call in the morning, right? Because it was that night. He steals his dog, goes and gets his girlfriend and their baby, and they drive. And you take it from there, John.
Well, I got a call first thing in the morning because we knew we had him on the run. We were getting really, really, really close. And I got a call from Eric Pearson saying, "Hey, Sarge, they got Robert at a hotel downtown, and it was the one on 3rd Street next, you know, by the dome down there.
Right. Super in, right along the highway there.
Yeah, right on Highway 40. I guess it's still 44 there. Mm-hmm. So he goes, "Don't come to the station. Just go right to the scene." So I drive down there, and Mark Feldmeyer was up at the door of the, you know, of the, on the third floor of this hotel. And Lieutenant Cagle meets me and says, and I put my vest on before I left the house, which I normally wouldn't do, just going, you know, to work, going to the office. So I pull up and I get out with my, and I had my vest and ray jacket on. Kenny goes, "Oh, good, you got your vest on. You're on the door." And I said, "Lieutenant, sergeants aren't expendable. I'll give my vest to somebody else." You know, and then he said, "No, get up there." So we, the kid was in there. He was in the room.
We have a great picture of that right there. Is producer Jack going to be able to get that on there?
Yeah, I'll put it on there.
Yeah. All right. But he was in there. We knew the dog was in there. We hear the dog. And then we figured his girlfriend was in there too. So we're, you know, of course the hostage team has been called out. You know, we're there and we're just, and the kid's yelling at us, hey cop, let me see your face, and we're like, "Hey, screw you, I'm not sticking my head out there, you know, you come out here." And I remember telling Mark, because Mark had a shotgun and I just had my pistol, I said, "When that door flies open, you take him and I'm taking the dog, because I know the dog's probably coming out first." So anyway, it took a while for the hostage team to get there, and then they set up and they go through their strategy and they do everything. And then they brought the fire department in, and they were evacuating rooms from, around his room, because it was up. I remember Mike Deba coming up the ladder, on the hook and ladder, and getting people out so they wouldn't have, because they couldn't go past his door. It was a couple of rooms, past that. So it took quite a while, and the kid kept getting more and more agitated, and he kept yelling and screaming. But then finally we turned the scene over to, the guys got to the door with their shields and stuff, and then it just so happens that, you were the negotiator.
And let me set that up just really quick, is that what's really odd about this case is that Hef was at one point with all of us chasing him, right?
Yeah.
And then now
he's a negotiator.
He becomes, and John was a trained negotiator, and he just happened to be the negotiator on call. So now you go from I'm chasing this guy to now I'm the negotiator, and that was pretty wild. So tell us about that, John, about when.
Well, I got that page that morning, and then I think it was Messmer Cagle was our boss. Cagle. So Cagle called me, and he said, "Hey, the guy you guys have been chasing, he's holed up in the thing, the hostage unit's down there, you got to go." So I go down there and get to the office, and foreign guy opens the thing, and he's like, "Hey, they've taken over my whole hotel." I'm like, "Yeah, well, it's going to be this way for a
while." Yeah.
"Buddy, don't worry about it. I need a phone." So he's like, "I got to do business." I said, "Your business probably can get suspended for a while, so take a break." So I get on the phone, and he talked to me for about an hour, and he kept saying, "Hey," it was kind of weird, because he's like, "Hey, you know what? I want this." So they always tell you in negotiations, you just delay them, right? Don't give into it, because that way, you keep,
we'll try to get somebody,
you keep
here,
the locus of control, right? So I keep telling him that, and he's like, eventually, after about an hour, he said, "I want a carton of cigarettes, and if you," and I said, "Hey, Robbie, all I can do is ask." He said, "Hey, can you put somebody on this phone that can get a fucking thing done? Because you can't." He did. He did. Well, I actually got a little chuckle out of it.
Yeah.
So he threw the phone. I could hear the phone hit the wall. So the girlfriend picked up the phone, and for about the next 2.5 hours, she was on the phone giving me the blow-by-blow.
Oh, well, then that's when you find out the kid. Nobody knew the kid was
there.
No,
yeah, and she said, I said, "Who else is besides?" I know there's a dog in there, because I could hear the dog. I said, "Anybody else in there?" She said, "Well, we got our, I think it's their son." It was their son. She said, "We have our son in here." So I had there's a kid in here. And she said, "He has a propane tank here also. And a gun." And I remember
that's quite the dilemma right there. Propane tank,
a kid, a dog, and a girlfriend.
And I don't know, it was a commander came in. because you know you guys are all smart.
Yeah,
you know,
all geniuses.
No, I'm kidding. So I can't remember who it was. Somebody came and said, "Hey, I don't think a bullet can penetrate the propane tank." I said, "You really?" I said, "You want to find out?
Yeah.
Because there's a bunch of policemen upstairs, and if this place blows, we're all dead. Yeah. Everybody's dead." I said, "That's not a gamble I want to take.
Right.
So just fine, thanks." You know. So I kept talking. She said, "He keeps inching towards. I could hear him. He's telling her what to tell me.
Because he won't get back. You can't do nothing.
Put Robbie back on the phone." She's like, "Robbie, he wants to talk to you. He's trying to help you." And he's like, "No, they're not. They're not trying to help me." But he didn't say anything to her about being on the phone. She just kept talking and kept talking and kept talking. Well, then eventually she said, I remember her screaming because she said, "He doesn't have the gun." I said, "Hey, Rod, I'm trying to get the phone near him. Said, Robbie, don't pick up the gun. Whatever you do, just don't do that. We can make this be, it's a bad situation, but we can all get out of here. Trust me. You got a kid. You got a, he loved the woman." I said, "You know, you got a kid, your dog. Don't do this. Let's just calm down. Think our way through this." At one point, he pushed her out of the way, and he grabbed the gun. I heard her scream. Said, "He's got the gun." So I had no way to communicate with anybody. Couldn't. So, you know, somebody's in there trying to run to tell, "Hey, he's got this pistol." Where I remember he put his back against the front door, you know, against the wall and the door. And at some point, I think he pulled the door open. I wasn't there, but I think he pulled the door open. And he took
pointed at.
Yeah, he did the suicide by police. Yeah. He wasn't going to do it himself, and
so he did. He opened the door and he pointed it at the SHIELD team.
It was Harold Kellerman,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then, but one of the things that I do remember is we went out as normal. We went out for drinks afterwards, but
back up. He got shot, right?
He got shot, and he got killed.
Okay,
so you didn't have to book him,
but
abated by death.
All cases
abated by death.
There was a lot of cases abated by death that I know Mickey Regan was happy about, but afterwards though, in talking to John, you know, he wasn't. It affected you.
It did. It's weird because I remember going through that train. There was a guy named Harvey Schlossberg who was our trainer, and he was a New York City policeman, put himself through school, and he got a PhD. He was a psychologist. So anyway, he created the model for the FBI negotiation thing, and he was the guy that gave us our instruction. And I remember him, he was in there saying, "Hey, listen, if you get a situation where you got a barricaded subject or a guy takes hostages and that guy ends up dead, and everybody else is fine, it's a win."
Oh.
He said, "It's a win."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Seriously." And he said, "I'm going to tell you right now, if this ever happens to you, I promise you, no matter how tough you think you are and how much prepared you are for this, it's you're invested. It's sort of intense.
Yeah.
You're invested in everybody that's in there. And you channel everything else out.
Right.
It's focused for 3 hours on this thing." He said, "If that happens, you're going to feel like you failed." And I remember, I heard the shots. I heard, pff, pff, pff. And I remember putting the phone down and saying, "Well, that's over."
Yeah.
It was the weirdest thing because everybody's kind of running around and then it's calm. And I remember I kind of felt, I know this sounds silly, but
yeah,
I sort of lost.
Yeah.
Like even though
your training, your trainer
go.
Said you didn't lose.
Right.
Yeah. I felt lost too in my own crowd of people. I felt sort of lost. I was like, damn.
Yeah. I was standing next to John when it happened. It was a 3-round burst and then all of a sudden dead quiet. And then, you know, you hear the hostage guys kind of yelling at each other. But yeah, John looked like he felt like he let Robert down maybe.
Yeah, I did. I did. In a strange way, I you get over it fairly quickly, but for half hour, 45 minutes there, it's like, I think this is the first guy the hostage unit has killed. And
right. Yeah. Wow. That's pretty interesting.
Well, no, I thought that was one of the, like John said, it was one of the better cases that we did over the years, or one of the more interesting, I guess you would say. Well, but what was also interesting is that the priest involved after the case was over and homicide is now handling this thing. And John, I think you have a little insight on the interview They brought the priest down there.
Yeah, we brought the priest down there, and he didn't want to come. So we went out there and told him, said, "Hey, we know you know Robbie Rebstock." And he said, you're coming down the homicide office. I'm not. He's old man. He said, "I'm not going anywhere." Said, oh, no, you're going.
He's retired.
Yeah. He had to be in his 70s. And I said, "Oh, no, you're going. You don't have a choice in this." So we put him in a car and got him down. Hondo was down there. And he wasn't aware of everything that kind of led to this. But now we got the hostage unit shot and killed somebody. That's a bunch of crimes. And, you know, kind of do Hondo.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So Hondo's there, and I'm standing there, and I think it was Ralph Campbell and somebody else was talking to the guy.
To the priest.
Hondo and I were looking in the room, and Hondo goes, "Here, what's up with this motherfucker?" And I said, "Well, this is the thing." He goes, "Oh, that's bullshit." And I said, he said he's not going to pay for this kid's funeral. And I said, I told him on the way down here, so this kid ain't going to Powder's Field. You're a big enough man to give him money for lots of other stuff that we know about we're not going to discuss. He's going to get a proper burial out of this. This motherfucker's going to get buried. This motherfucker's going to be buried. he's going to pay for it, too. So I went there and told him, "I don't give a shit who you are. You're going to pay for this, boy. You understand me?" Yeah, like, "Yeah, yes, sir." Yeah. So he did it. He ended up at Jennings at Memorial Cemetery with him. So now I don't know who. At the end of the day, I don't know who paid for that. I have no idea. But
you were assuming that there might have been influenced by.
But you know that same priest, which is a strange thing, because this is, I think this kind of was this case was a precursor to SNAP.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I get involved. I'm working for Bob Tomier.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we had some case with Father Jing, or I can't remember the guy's name, but anyway, he was accused of the same thing with some kid up at the cathedral school. So we had to serve a bunch of summonses in this federal case. So I ended up looking. I had to serve this David Clohessy, who was the ex-director of SNAP, and this other woman whose name escapes me at the moment. But somehow I ended up on the SNAP website. Guess who ends up on this thing? This priest in Rebstock's case. He was defrocked. They have a long list of parishes he was at, where he was alleged to have done these things. Maybe the allegations were true, because at the end of the day, the archdiocese had no problem saying, "You're out."
Yeah.
You want to explain what SNAP means?
Yeah, I think it's a survivor's network of people abused by priests. I think it's, if that's not the name,
close enough.
The acronym, it's close.
But the, and I think that we'll wrap the Rebstock case up on that, but there was one other incident. Where John and I were riding together, and John was used as a negotiator. And so we're riding around, and it's we're working 8 to 4. And it's a Monday night, and John has invited all of our buddies and a lot of Bureau people over to his house for Monday Night Football. And
Rams Monday Night Football.
Right, and it's getting towards the end of the shift, and they go online, or they go all points. So is there any negotiator working?
I'm stone quiet.
He ain't answering nothing. And I do it again. He goes, and I just look at him, and he's like, I'm not answering. But he was on call. So now he's got that pager, but he wasn't going to answer the radio, but the pager goes off. So he's like, "Oh, shit, I got to go." So then he gets just on the radio. "Hey, is anybody calling?" And he acts like he didn't hear it. I heard somebody's calling for a negotiator. So, yes, and respond to the Poplar Street Bridge. They got a possible jumper.
Jumper.
And, John, you can take it from there.
So I'm pissed. I'm trying to go home to put these chicken wings on a grill and get beer ice down, right? You know, I just want to go home and watch Monday Night Football. So I'm like, "Oh, okay, I got to go down here." So I'm hoping, like, I want this to get resolved as fast as I can make it happen. So I'm getting there. East St. Louis had responded, and they were – obviously on the east side of the bridge, and they're this way, and here comes the 4th District, and they're this way, and this guy, he's several trellises up, you know, he's hanging up there, and he's got these signs. He's got two-sided sign around his neck. He made it himself. It's all with different color markers, and so I had all this social justice shit all over it, right, you know, this and that, and I'm mad about this, I'm disgruntled about that, and it goes on and on.
He got lots of beef. He's got a beef.
And, you know, he's got the weird tennis shoes and weird socks and, you know, the whole...
New Balance tennis shoes with Lee jeans shorts.
Yeah. Yeah, how'd you know?
He's dressed very dapper.
Well, that's what I said. He's a dapper bridge climber.
A dapper jumper.
Dapper jumper.
So I remember I'm standing there, and Eddie Koontz was the commander. And Eddie Koontz looks at me, and he said, hey, what are we going to do? And I said, well, I don't know. I don't know. There's no prescription for this. I said, but if I could just make it. He says, yeah, it's your deal. You do whatever you want us to do, we'll do. I said, we should probably just tell East St. Louis to go home. It's on our side. We're here anyway, so just get them out of there. So they're happy to go. Like, yep. They're gone. So I said, Lieutenant, I said, I think this guy just wants attention. I said, if we could just back up off the bridge a little bit, just back towards the entrance ramp, I said, maybe this guy, he's not going to get what he wants. Maybe we'll flush him, get him down out of here. Okay. And I said, Lieutenant, you might want to go too. And he said, well, you sure? And I said, yeah, this could get a little unorthodox. He's like, oh, okay. So he goes that way. So now the guy's up there, and I look at him, and I said, he's talking. And I said, I can't hear you. And he said, I can hear you really well. And I said, well, that's because everybody knows sound travels up. I don't know if it did or not. I just made it up. I said, sound goes up, buddy. I said, I'm down below you. I said, can you come down? Nah. I'm not coming anywhere. I'm not moving 3 feet. I said, okay. I said, guess what we're going to do? I said, true. I said, we're going home. He said, what? I said, no, we're going home. I said, I've got a football game to watch, and I've got people coming over, and I got beer and chicken wings on the ready. I said, so we're going to leave. So then he comes down. So I figured, now we're in. So he said, if I come down, you're not going to. I said, I'm not going to touch you. I said, I promise you, I won't handcuff you. I'm not going to do anything. He said, oh, okay. I said,
no, you told him, what about the post-dispatch person?
Oh, no, that's later.
Okay.
That's later. Because I got to, like, yeah. This is like a true stupid negotiation. Like, I got to say something, and he'll come down a bit, like 4 feet. He's way up there, too, near the top.
Right.
So I told him, I said, I don't think you're going to jump. If you'd have wanted to jump, you'd have done this a long time ago when you had a whole audience here. He's like, you don't know what I'll do. You don't know what I'm going to do. I said, nah, I'm pretty confident you're not going to jump. I said, but I'll tell you what, I'm tired of your bullshit. I said, I'm going to walk. So I start to walk. He says, I'll come down. So he comes down another bit. So then now he's going to hold his ground. I said, I'll make you a deal. I said, I know a guy at the Post Dispatch, which I do. I said, a guy named Timmy O'Neill. He's a reporter over at the Post. I said, if you come down, I'll take you to Central Patrol. I'll call Timmy. Timmy will come to the station, and he'll give you your voice right through the newspaper. The guy's like, he will? I said, oh, yeah. I know him. And actually, the truth of the matter is, he knew my oldest sister, and he was one of Dan Nichols' best friends.
Okay.
So I said, and I was I told you I was a reporter at the Globe. I was young, but my first job was the Globe Democrat, so I kind of knew Timmy a little bit in many ways. So Timmy has no idea, and he never, ever heard this story. And I said, so I'm going to get Timmy down here, and Timmy's going to take your story, and it's going to end up in the Post-Dispatch. He said, well, damn it, that's all I want. I just want to be heard. I said, well, you got it. So he's committed. So he's got about 3 feet. Fourth District flies up. Boom. They got handcuffs on him. He said, you son of a bitch. I thought you told me. I said, I didn't touch you. I told you. I'm not lying to you. It wasn't me. I said, I can't control what these guys do. He goes, oh, yeah. And I bet there's no Timmy O'Neill. And I bet there's no story coming. I bet there's nothing coming. I said, well, you're probably right. There's going to be no stories in the paper. You're just going to.
And you were on time for the football game.
Oh, yeah. No. That's the greatest part of the whole story is I got in the car. So we're done. I'm out. Heading south, 90 miles.
I can remember I dropped you back off at the station to get a car because you didn't. You were like, I'll get stuck down there. And then, and I go, I'm not going down there with you. I'm watching that game. I told you.
That's a Sawyerism, too. You know, always with thick and thin, you know.
Oh, no, I was out of there. It was a Rams game that night. And I told, and I think I said, I'm going to your house. I'll be there when you get there.
Can I rip on you one more time?
Oh, no, please go ahead.
Do you remember when the guy was going downtown robbing all the blood banks? Do you remember this? Huh?
Go ahead. I don't know. Not right this second.
So this guy goes down. He's doing armed robberies downtown. So he sticks up two blood banks and out of some other stuff. So right across the street from one of these robberies, around the corner, there's guys doing construction on they're remodeling or retrofitting a building, and they're all sitting up there. And some of these guys have been talked to. Well, guy says, well, I saw this guy run down the street, and he's ripping off a mask, and he throws his shit in this trash can right here. So I said, you know, we ought to go talk to these guys. So we, long story short is, we find out who the kid is. We go down. He's lived, like, down there. I can't remember the names of the places, like 14th or 15th and, you know.
Whatever.
Anyway.
15th and whatever.
With 15th and whatever. This good description. So anyway, we get the kid out of the house. So now we got all these cases backed up. All these construction worker guys are like, yeah, I'll come, sure. I'll look at the lineup. I got a good look at this dude. There's like 10 of them. Like, we got a real good look at the guy. So we get to the station. All these people show up. I got all this evidence from these cases, you know, masks. And
the just remembered.
Whole shit. And I get Detective Heffley, got all these people in the lobby. Can you come out? So I go out. They got all these people. I'm trying to get everybody organized. I said, hey, somebody tell Sawyer I need his help. Oh, he's gone. I said, he's gone. He was just here. Oh, you remember the guy that was running? I don't know who told me. I said, do you remember the guy that was running around in the West End in the van and doing all the stick-ups? Well, Joe Brower got him. They got him up in the 7th District. I said, what does he have to do with Sawyer? Oh, he went to help. Yeah. He gave him some aid. You know, he's assistant.
He needed help. He called me. I need some help. I said, I'll be up there.
So I said, no shit. Well,
I was already in custody. Yeah.
I need some help here. So I
that doesn't sound like
I call
you.
Him. I go, hey, man, where are you at?
I'm bigger. I'm better on the hunt than I am on the cleanup.
Oh, Irish could buy you on duty.
No, I'm there. I'm there. You know, like now I'm into the night and I'm trying to, I'm like, just go home, man. Just.
No, I went up to help Joe Brower and he ended up cleaning up like 25 burglaries on that case.
I know he did. So
or 25. So on both cases, there was like 30 robberies cleared up.
Yeah.
You're an assist on all.
I captured both dudes, but I didn't write nothing.
Oh, really? Okay.
I love it.
He's, imagine that.
He's on more ARs. He's on more ARs probably than anybody in the city.
And didn't push a pen.
Oh, and assist guess what? Him. Never else happened either. No subpoenas that are coming for a truck. Oh, no, yeah. He's got nothing.
Yeah. It's your turn to write. Okay. Yeah. Danny Howard sees this. Hey, it's your turn to write, Tommy. All right, I got this. All right, you know, so-and-so sees this, sometimes, so-and-so did that.
Sometimes you went to the Mickey Regan School of Evidence. Of
drawers, baby.
Stuff in the locker in the drawers.
Yeah. If it's in the drawer, I know where it's at. If it's downstairs, I have no idea where it's at.
Poor Mickey used to get these phone calls. Go ahead.
The one thing, though, both these guys did, and everybody else that worked for me in the Bureau, is the nightly that goes out, that goes to the chief and all the deputy chiefs and all the commanders.
I'm aware of that.
That we make a big arrest, and I'd be there, you know. And everybody's name is in this thing except for mine. Detective so-and-so and Detective so-and-so and Detective so-and-so and, you know, whatever. And, you know, and I'm like the guy who actually, like, handcuffed them, you know. But then when they wrote the police report, their names aren't anywhere in there.
Yeah, you
and
seized
I'm doing everything.
Everything.
I seized everything. I got all the statements.
Oh, sure.
I put hands on everybody.
See in court.
Yeah, so they get all the glory, and then I'm on my day off, you know, because back then sergeants didn't get, you know, didn't get overtime.
Right.
I'm going to court on the case that these assholes took all the credit for when the chief wakes up and reads his nightly. So I never really, I'm still bitter about it to this day.
Do you remember the guy, me, you, and Sawyer were driving? I think you were just a sergeant for not too long, and you came back to the detective bureau, and the three of us, one of the first nights you were there was a weekend. He said, hey, let's ride around. So we're riding around. We don't get 3 feet outside the station. Remember the guy had all the credit cards? Yeah. Remember this?
Yeah.
Well, I blamed you for that, too.
Guys, you seized them all?
Yeah. Well,
there was a little bit of a whacking going on, and the guy's like,
That's the sergeant's job.
We've covered everything with the Hef. And I will say this about Hef, is we were, it was great riding with him. It was one of the most fun times I've ever had because John has a great sense of humor. Great policeman. Taught me a lot.
Great imitation.
Well, I'll tell you the one. Is one more story, quick. And I'll tell it. Just make it quick. We had a guy. I had a guy that was wanted. Had an arrest warrant on him. Not a wanted, but it's a warrant. So the difference is that if you know he's in a house, you can go in and get him.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell Hef. We just start riding together. I tell Hef I'm looking for this guy, and Hef's like, "All right, you got his phone number?" And I was like, "Yeah, I got his phone number." He's not going to answer the fucking phone. He's a arrest warrant. He goes, "No." He goes, and he just came out of the FAST unit, and they used to chase fugitives around. So we go to his house, and I give Hef, he goes, give me the phone number. So he calls the house number, and it's one of the old tricks that the FAST unit used that he learned down there. And I was like, come on, man. So he talks, and Mama answers the phone. And the guy, I remember the guy's first name was Calvin. I don't know why, but it's because it made me laugh. But Hef goes, Calvin there? No, he's not. Oh, okay, can you let him know? And the Department of Employment, John from the Department of Employment called. We got a couple jobs paying $25 an hour. His Social Security
unskilled
number popped
labor.
Up. Right. His Social Security number popped up. We're just trying to get a hold of him. She goes, hold on, he's here. So they go get him, and then he gets on, and John starts asking him questions. What's your name? What's your date of birth? What's your Social Security? Would you do this? Yeah, I'll do that job. Definitely do that job.
And
I'll definitely.
Back there going, oh, he is going to
yeah,
do that
he's
job.
He's definitely going to do that job. So we call all the troops up because now we know he's in there, and we go in, and long story short, we get him. But the funny part that I'll always remember is as they're marching him out, the mom gets on and she goes, damn, Calvin just got a good job.
It only lasted for a couple minutes.
Yeah.
That was Terry McGinnis got arrested. So that was a Terry McGinnis special. And I never could figure out how this worked. And so I'd ride with Terry in the past. And he, he's, my name's Joe Smith. Joe Smith. Come on, Terry. We can come up with something. Joe Smith. He goes, I'm Joe Smith from Missouri, whatever,
Department of Employment.
Yeah, employment. And I have unskilled labor jobs for $15 an hour. If your son has a strong back, well, we'll hire him. This will never work, man. It worked like a champ.
Actually, that would be a good show is to have some guys from the old FAST unit on some of the fugitive chases that you guys all did. And were you in part of that, John?
Yeah, I was there for a year and change.
Fugitive apprehension street team?
Strike team.
Strike team.
Yep.
FAST.
Nope, but hey, John.
No, I appreciate you guys having me.
I'd love to have you on. Awesome. That was cool.
He'll be back.
We got a lot of shows
Thanks,
left.
Thanks, Johnny.
Oh, thank you, Dan.
Thank
Good to see you guys. Tommy.
See you, brother.
All right.
Thank you.
Jimmy.
Peace.